Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review. We're live tonight on Odyssey, D Live, Rumble, and Entropy. Please make sure you're tuned in and please make sure you're sharing the stream. It's always very good when people share the stream because I can't share the stream. I mean, I can share it on Telegram and Gab, which I do, but I can't share it on Twitter. I can't share it on Facebook or Instagram. So please give us a leg up and make sure you share it. Now, yesterday, some of you may have seen, I did a live stream with David Clues, and we talked about a new project we've got, which will help nationalists alter the outcome of parliamentary by-elections. It's an exciting project, and some of you might have questions about that. Now, if you do have questions about that particular project, if you have questions about what me and David said, and if you want to ask me questions about what we said in this project, please don't do it tonight. I do appreciate all the super chats, but myself and Laura are going to do a special stream this Friday where we put over PA's action plan for the next couple of years, the things we're working on, the projects we're going to be moving ahead with. And if you're interested in finding out about all of that, about the future of PA, about the way we're going to be moving forward, please check out that stream on Friday. It's going to be dedicated to this idea of removing Labour and Conservative MPs and how PA wants to move forward. There's also going to be a major bit of news reveal, something that you're going to find quite shocking. So please do tune in for that. Now, obviously, I'm not going to give that away now. You'll have to tune in on Friday night. And that will also be the first stream Laura's done with me in a while, because obviously Sam hasn't been in the house, hasn't been able to look after the kids, so she hasn't been able to stream. But he's in the house a little more now. He's allowed to stay later. His curfew has been pushed back, which means she can have an evening of streaming every now and again. So this is Laura's sort of comeback stream where me and her will be talking about the future of PA. So that'll be on Friday. Now, I'll also be live with Dr. David Duke on Friday, and I'm trying to rustle up a Sunday night stream, so we might see something then. Now, obviously, if you like all the work I'm doing, if you like the initiatives I'm involved in, if you like all the different things that I do on a daily, weekly basis, and if you like these streams, none of which, by the way, none of the work I do is behind a paywall. So if you like these streams, please consider making a small donation. You can do that by Entropy. You can do that. We can't do it by any other means. You've got to do that by Entropy. If you like these streams, please hop over to Entropy. The links are in the description. The links are in the live chat. Please consider making a small donation, $3, $5, $10, whatever you can afford. Please be as generous as you can. And please make sure that I can continue to do this. Obviously, I rely on your generosity. And I rely on you guys sending me super chats to allow me to keep doing this, to keep running Patriotic Alternative, and to keep pushing the ethno-nationalist and anti-Zionist agenda that we do. You can also write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com, and you can donate via other means, via cryptocurrency. All the crypto links are in the description below. So please do consider doing one of those things to help me out. Now, tonight's stream is going to be a good one because we've got a lot of really, really important topics to cover. And it's a very British-centric stream tonight. So I thought, well, there's no better guest to have on than Joe Marsh. Joe Marsh is the fearless nationalist stalwart from Wales who's been involved in this game for decades now and has helped steer the nationalist movement in the correct direction for many a decade. Joe is one of the most active people I know. He's always there. He's reliable. And he never backs down. Joe, how are you doing, my friend? Have you recovered since you had all of that publicity with the undercover documentary in Wales?
Yeah, everyone's fine. Nothing really came of it after. We had police following us around for a while. Even had my girlfriend being followed by the police, but it was like they were following us in a way that we knew they were following us, to intimidate us, to stop us doing what we're doing. But it all seems to have died a death now. No one's been arrested. So, we're just back on track now.
Well, that's good to hear, mate. Well, let's get into the first topic then about some people who aren't back on track. Now, one of the biggest news stories around the nationalist movement in the UK over the last couple of weeks has been an incident that took place in a pub in Greater Manchester where nine members of the British Movement, which is a national socialist movement in the UK, went to a pub They had a swastika birthday cake and unveiled a large swastika flag as well as a British movement flag, because they were basically having a birthday celebration for Hitler. Now, someone leaked the pictures. Somebody took pictures of them, leaked them to the newspapers and the press, and the press and the media kicked up a massive, massive fuss about it. It was all over the Manchester Evening News. The Manchester Evening News went on a huge campaign of naming and shaming the guys involved, obviously with the intention of either getting them arrested or causing a situation where they would lose their jobs or get into trouble with family and friends or get pressured socially in multiple ways. And obviously, when you're in the paper, it can be quite stressful because, you know, if you do have a job where you're working with others and people recognize you, you can lose your job. And if you do have family members or friends who are a little bit sensitive, they can throw a little bit of a hissy fit and make your life difficult in other ways. Now, this was all in the papers for quite some time. There were several stories ran about it. And look, you know, whatever you think, you know, is unveiling a flag and cutting a birthday cake really a crime? Well, I don't believe it is. And I think to call it a crime is absolutely ridiculous and unbelievable. Yet, about a week ago, the nine people who were involved in this birthday celebration had their doors kicked in dawn raids by police all over Manchester. They were dragged out of their homes. They were arrested. Apparently counter-terror were involved. And this has blown up in a big way. Now, all of the nine people who were involved are now on very, very strict bail conditions. Their lives are being interfered with. I bet they couldn't even contact people like myself, let alone come on a show like this and talk about what they've been through. Obviously, they chose to accept those bail conditions and would have been told they'd been remanded in custody. Otherwise, I mean, personally, you know, I would say that's their decision. I mean, my sort of tactic would be like, well, remand me then, do what you want, but I'm not going to give up my freedoms indefinitely. But they chose to go with that. And obviously, they were probably put under some considerable pressure. But this has all blown up in quite a big way. And before I throw it over to Joe, I've got to say this. The fact that Manchester police have done this. Now, Manchester police were the police authority that refused to investigate incidents of grooming in Greater Manchester. And their reason for not investigating the grooming cases in Greater Manchester was that they said they were under-resourced, they didn't have the resources to follow up the grooming cases, and they actually told officers to go and investigate other ethnicities. Leave the Muslim grooming gangs alone. They didn't have the resources to deal with it. They shelved all their investigations. They mothballed all of the attempts to look into grooming because they didn't have the money. They were under-resourced, overstretched, etc. But when nine people sit in a pub, eat a birthday cake and unveil a flag, they have got the resources for dawn raids, mass arrests, and they can throw all of their power and weight behind that kind of activity. And at this point, you've got to say, are the police in Manchester anything other than a political police force that exist to make politically motivated arrests or not to make politically motivated arrests? Because obviously they decided, due to political motivation, not to arrest Pakistani Muslims who are raping white British girls. They decided that was too much for a political hot potato, but they do absolutely have time to arrest people eating a birthday cake. Now, I've got to say this. What were these guys arrested for? Who were the victims? Was anyone harmed? Of course they weren't. I wouldn't be harmed if somebody ate a birthday cake with any symbol on it. It's up to them. You know, it's ridiculous to arrest people for this. This is a political series of arrests. This is political persecution. And from my position, these guys have really not committed any crime. And there certainly isn't a victim. But I believe they're probably going to be facing relatively heavy sentences. And depending what the police recover from their hard drives, their mobile phones, etc. I don't know what those guys are looking at. And I don't mean that in a sexual sense. But if you've looked at something online now, say you've been listening to certain music, say you've read certain forums, say you've been on certain image boards, the police can use all of that against you. I think this is a complete scandal. I think the police have abused their power. And I've also heard that when the police did raid these nine people's homes, that they burst in through their doors, they smashed the doors down, they accosted people's wives and children, and they even prevented people's wives from going to the toilet, saying, you know, no, you can't go to the toilet in case you flush evidence, etc. Evidence of what? You know, what remains of the birthday cake? You know, who knows? But they were treated as if they were drug kingpins, or I was going to say they were treated as if they were child rapists. But no, child rapists in Manchester get treated far better than these guys did. And I think this is another example of how draconian and tyrannical the current police state is in Britain and how politically motivated arrests are today. What do you think to this, Joe? Because, I mean, you and I have spoken about this earlier today, and it's really a grim indicator of what the police will prioritise and how harsh police action will be against people who do things that are deemed politically incorrect.
The thing is, see, is that they've got to keep this narrative going that the biggest threat is white terrorism. And this is, for them, this is handed it on a plate, you know, like literally on a plate, you know, because if you do things like that, you've got to expect to be arrested because, you know, then they'll never miss a chance to arrest somebody for that sort of thing. Like, they've not hurt anybody, but like, they should have realized that those photos were going to get out and they were going to get busted. And the problem is if that was a Hamas cake or, you know, a hammer and sickle cake, nobody would give a shit. This is the problem, see? It's, you know, they wouldn't, even a Hamas, like a prescribed terror group's cake, they wouldn't raid you for that. I'm pretty sure they wouldn't, you know? But anything like, you know, a swastika, obviously they're going to raid you. But like anything pro-white, if it said it's okay to be white, they probably would have got busted. You know, look what happened to Sam. It's, you know, people should not be getting arrested for this. It's absolutely nonsense. But, you know, they'll, like, I spoke to one of the guys and he said that they even arrested the one guy's disabled mother and that they didn't knock any of the doors. They smashed the doors in, you know? Like, why did they need to smash the doors in? It's just, like, it's all part of the treatment, isn't it, you know?
Well, I think they go so over the top because they are trying to terrorize us. They're trying to instill fear in white British people who do anything that is perceived to be against the multicultural narrative. And obviously, the ultimate sin is to say anything nice about Adolf Hitler, National Socialism, or, you know, Second World War Germany. It's as simple as that. Say anything nice about the Third Reich, and you are in really, really big trouble, and you do get treated worse than a sex offender. You get treated as if you were some drug kingpin. Now, I've seen these raids take place in places like Liverpool and Greater Manchester, you know, big drugs raids, and this is the kind of you know, force they use. They burst into people's houses. There's, you know, officers in what looks like sort of RoboCop style body armor. The journalists are tipped off beforehand, so they're there on hand to take all the pictures, to make sure the media have these images that they can publish, which again scares normal people. Oh my God, well, we better not say the wrong thing or the thought police will be through the door. And it's all part of this growing tyranny. And I think it's very interesting because we'll talk about what I'm going to mention later. So let's not go into this now, but it's very interesting that Starmer and Robert Jenrick from the Conservatives this week have been forced to talk about demographics, talk about migration control, talk about things such as migrants being forced to speak English if they come here, calling this country an island of strangers. But at the same time, they are still absolutely dedicated to smash any form of genuine ethno-nationalism. So genuine ethno-nationalism, these people aren't ethno-nationalists. They're not even really civic nationalists. These people are, for the most part, cultural Marxists or ardent capitalists who don't care about race, culture, etc. They just want to make money. Many of them are also Zionists. So whilst they might say things that makes it appear they're coming in our direction, they are coming in our direction in a sense, but they're coming in our direction carefully behind a militarized police force who will be kicking our doors in to make examples of us. That's the way they're coming in our direction. They're coming in our direction because they still want to arrest us. And you've got to remember, this is all coming on the back of Southport, where we saw the most, or one of the most draconian clampdowns in British history against people who were essentially political protesters. And, you know, it's not going to get better. I believe this is going to get worse before it gets better. But I will say this. Now, I believe these guys had the right to do this, and I absolutely do not believe they should have been arrested or brutalized. And if these guys are charged, and if they are found guilty, and if they go to jail, we should raise money, we should support their families, and we should do everything in our power to make sure their families are looked after while they're in jail. You know, we should do our best to look after any genuine patriotic people or nationalists who get in trouble with the law. But I will say this, not to contradict everything I've just said, because I do stand by these people. Maybe going into a pub and whipping out a giant swastika flag and eating a swastika birthday cake wasn't the best plan these people had. And I'm saying this because I don't think it's a crime to do that. It definitely shouldn't be a crime to do that. There's no victim, and people certainly shouldn't be arrested and definitely shouldn't be going to jail for this. But we are living under this draconian tyranny, and people have got to box a little more clever. You know, you've got to think to yourself, do you want to get arrested? Because this is probably a fast track to getting arrested. Now, from what I know of the law, if they'd have done this in their own home, in a private area, it wouldn't have been a public order offence, and they were arrested for public order offences. If they'd done it in a private room in a pub and it was a private members only gathering, again, it would not have been a public order offence. The reason this was a public order offence is because it was done in an open area in a pub that the public had access to. At that point, the police can pursue public order charges against them, which is what they're doing. And as I said, I absolutely stand by these people's right to do this. But sometimes I think you've got to be really careful not to give the system an easy win. And, you know, I hate to say this, but we have to be careful what we do, because doing something like that has now given the state the right to brutalize 9 people, their families, and potentially widen the charges if they find anything questionable on these people's computers or telephones. And unfortunately, one of the guys who was arrested, they found a hand grenade in his house. I don't know whether it's a live hand grenade, a dummy, a prop. You know, maybe the guy is a collector of, you know, old military, and he had a deactivated hand grenade. But if you've got something like that in your house and you get arrested for what would be just a public order offence, you might well end up on a terror charge 6 months down the line for, you know, a piece of military in your house. I don't know what you think, Joe. Am I being too harsh on them? I mean, what's your take on doing this kind of activity?
Well, I wouldn't have done it, you know, but they should have known they were going to get nicked. And the thing is, like you say, if they'd have done it in their own houses, they wouldn't have got arrested. But if they then published the pictures, they would have, because that is Section 18 of the Public Order Act. It's displaying. So the minute you posted it on Twitter or anywhere, you would have been arrested for that, you know. But I wouldn't have done this. But like I say, people, you're just handing yourself over to them doing this. And people ought to take a lesson from it, because it's like me. You know, I don't post the National Socialist stuff, but like, I'm looking at everything I post on Twitter now. Before I post everything, if I post a video, I'm watching it all the way through, just in case there's anything dodgy in there, because they literally need one excuse to come to your house. You can accidentally post something that's a little bit dodgy and they'll be through your door. You've got to literally be thinking all the time. you know? And it's not like people are in prison for like 2 and 3 years for just one tweet. It's, you know, people really need to up their game and be careful of what they're doing, you know?
I agree. I really do feel for these people. I feel for their families. And as I said, I do fundamentally support their right to do this. I don't think it's a crime. I think the fact they've been arrested is a scandal. I think it is part of this wider clampdown on our freedoms. And I do absolutely believe that if they go to jail or if charges are brought and they, you know, if they go to jail, you know, I would be more than happy to either set up or share or help propagate a fundraiser for them and their families, because they should be looked after and we should look after all people who are arrested for thought or speech crimes. But at the same time, you know, without wanting to sound like a cuck, we shouldn't make it easy for the state. And that's really how I see it. We've got to be careful not to make it easy for the state. The state are looking to arrest people. The state are looking to brutalize people. They're looking to make examples of anyone they can, because at the moment there is this rising sense of anti-immigrant sentiment, of anti-migration sentiment. There's a rising sort of awakening of the issues of demographics, and the state are going to react to that in several ways. In one way, they may well come and try to co-opt some of our talking points, but in another way they will lash out at people and use any excuse they can to screw over anybody who they feel has gone over a line which allows them to bring about a prosecution. Because fundamentally, the powers that be, whatever they actually say, whatever talking points of ours they adopt, these are the same people who have repeatedly backed, endorsed, and helped create an anti-white multicultural society. And when you do push back against that anti-white multicultural society, they're going to come for you, regardless of their current narrative around immigration. You know, we're going to talk about that shortly, but I think a lot of what we're seeing now is politicians jumping on the reform bandwagon. But I do think we need to box clever. And I would say this, you know, just think very carefully about what you say and do, about the things you tweet, and certainly think carefully about symbols you display in public, because I don't want to see anyone having the house raided at 5 a.m. in the morning, especially not those who've got, you know, wives and small children. And I've also got to say this. You know, at a crucial time like this, where we need nationalists and patriots on the street, speaking to the public, campaigning against the migrant hotels, helping to push back against this demographic nightmare, I don't want to see more of our people going to jail and losing their freedoms. I'm saying this from a good faith position. You know, I don't think this should be illegal. I don't think these people should be being persecuted. But I hope people, you know, take this the way it's intended. We do really have to box clever, and we do have to understand where the pitfalls lie and how we can avoid those pitfalls to ensure that we all stay out of jail and can stay doing what we do and be as active as we currently are. Do you want to add anything to that, mate?
I was just going to say, you know, like, these things shouldn't be illegal, but they are illegal. And while they are, you need to stay within the, you know, the parameters, because if you step outside them, you're going to get busted. And it's not just the go into prison thing, it's the bail conditions. So they've, you know, I've been on bail for 18 months. So in that 18 months, I wasn't allowed to attend demonstrations. I wasn't allowed to consort with certain people. You know, so they've controlling you even when you end up not being charged with something. It just allows them to have that control over you and to shut you down. So don't make it easy for them.
Yeah, I've got to echo that. We've got to be very careful. We've got to be, you know, very, very careful with what we do. And I'll give you an example of this. There was a guy, I'm not going to name him. I don't want to, you know, bring his name up or sort of bring him into any disrepute, but this is a real story. Some people know who I'm talking about, some people won't. There was a guy who was arrested on what was initially a few very minor charges. And when they arrested him, they found, they took his computer, they took his mobile phone, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the minor charges were soon swept to one side. So he was arrested on these sort of, for these minor offences. But when they got his computer and they had the right to go through his computer, they found he had a document on his desktop. Now, he claimed he'd never opened the document and didn't know it was there, and somebody had sent it to him in an email. And that may well have been the case. But when they analysed his computer, they found that he'd made two backups of said document. So he backed up his computer regularly. And as part of those backups, the document had been copied, and essentially another copy of it had been made as a backup twice. So now he had three copies of this document. So that made the situation worse. And then when they looked at the properties of the document, they found that he had opened it on one occasion. Now, he'd opened this document for less than 5 minutes, certainly not long enough to read it all, certainly not long enough to digest it properly, and certainly not long enough to take anything useful from it. You know, I assume somebody sent it to him, he opened it, quickly skimmed through it, thought, what the hell's this, closed it, never thought about it again. But that was enough for them to charge him with the possession and I think it was also the production of terrorist documents. Possession because he had it, and production because he made two copies of it, because he was duplicating it. And this is how crazy it is. You can have a document on your desktop, click copy and paste, you know, 10 times, and you're a producer of that document. And this guy ended up getting 8 years. And yeah, I said that right. 8 years in jail because of that one document. Now, they boosted up his sentence because of the things that he was organizing in real life, the name he called himself when he was organizing in real life, because he gave himself a military designation. So because he gave himself a military designation and demanded everyone called him by this military designation, they then said, you know, these are the actions of somebody starting a paramilitary group. And at that point, it bumped up the possession and copying of this file to a lot more serious offence. You know, it's a terror offence anyway, but because it's coupled with his real life activity, they said it's definitely something he would have intended to use or learn from in order to use in a bad way. And this guy's got a wife and two kids. He had a good job. He owned his own property, you know, mortgaged property. And now he's languishing in jail. Now, I don't think he'll spend 8 years in jail, but he will spend at very minimum 4 years in jail. I should imagine it'll be about 5 years in jail. And when he comes out, he will be on the strictest of restrictions. And that's a horrible place to be, especially when you've got a wife and two small children. You know, he's gonna miss some of the best years of his children's life. You know, those magical years when you are, you know, seeing your children, you know, learn to walk, seeing your children, you know, read for the first time. You know, you might be going to the, you know, going to school to see them in the Christmas nativity. He's going to miss all that. And that's scandalous. But that is the way they operate. And if you allow them a way into your house, if you allow them an excuse to, you know, take your devices, even if you've got something on there that you don't know you've got, that can be used to send you down for a sentence that will make your eyes water. And I know what lots of people in the chat will be thinking, well, Mark, you know, there's Muslim groomers, there's rapists, there's people who've had hundreds of thousands of obscene pictures of children found on their computers, and they've got lesser sentences. And yeah, that's true. But unfortunately, I'm not in a position to change the corrupt and crooked British justice system. All I can do is come on shows like this and try to educate people and talk about it and hopefully lead people in the right direction. And just to underline what I've said, I'm not advocating for cucking. I'm not advocating that people should, you know, let go of their beliefs. What I'm saying is be very careful what you do in public places, because if you do something like this, you are inviting the police to enter your home at 5 a.m. trash your house, brutalise your family, and potentially prepare a case that could see you going down for a multi-year sentence. Anyway, Joe, if you want the last word on this, and we'll move on to the next topic.
No, I think we've covered it all there. You know, people just need to not be handing themselves over on a plate, because it's just pointless. And you're no use to the movement when you're locked up, are you? Or on stupid conditions.
Exactly. Well, we're going to move on now to the issue of Robert Jenrick. So Robert Jenrick is a Conservative. People will know who he is. He ran for the Conservative Party leadership. He didn't win. Obviously, Badenoch won. But recently, he's gone on television and he started talking about demographics. He started talking about white people, started talking about places like Barking and Dagenham, places like Bradford, and talking about how those places are places where white people feel like strangers, where white people have declined incredibly in the past few years. And I think this is really, really interesting, because the Conservatives are obviously arch multiculturalists. And look, I'm not saying for one minute that, he's now a good guy. He's now one of us, because he isn't. He's just not. This guy is somebody who supported multiculturalism. He supported open borders. He was in a cabinet position when the Boris wave happened. He was in a cabinet position when, in a position where he could have done something to reduce immigration. But, as always, these people never do that when they're in a position of power. It's only when they're not in a position of power and somebody like Reform are making a big difference at the ballot box, do they start talking our issues. Anyway, I've got the video here. I'm going to present this to you, and then Joe can give his thoughts on it. So here's what Robert Jenrick had to say. And I think you'll all agree, it sounds very much like the sort of thing somebody might say at a nationalist meeting.
Certain places in this country where people are not living side by side, where we are a very divided, segregated society. If you look at the centre of Bradford, for example, 50% of people were not born in the UK. If you look at the centre of Luton, almost 50% of people only arrived in the UK in the last 10 years. If you look at parts of Dagenham, the white British population has reduced by 50% in the last 25 years.
Is that a problem?
So I think, well, the pace of change is immense and people are sick of that. People want to see mass migration ended. They want to return to the levels of immigration that we have enjoyed as a country.
Why is it a problem if the percentage of white people has fallen or risen?
Because you can't successfully integrate people at this speed into our country.
But why does the colour of their skin matter?
It's not about the colour of someone's skin. It's about whether or not someone has just arrived in our country. And if you have places...
But that is a different point,
if you have
then.
Places,
that is a different point.
If you
point.
Have places like the centre of Bradford, where half the population has only just arrived in our country, how can you expect those people to know our history, our heritage, our norms, our traditions, to be well integrated? If you see profound change in a community like Dagenham, where within 25 years, the people living in the community has changed almost beyond recognition, understandably, some people who live there will feel that the place that they knew no longer exists. And that is why people are so frustrated and angry at the decisions that politicians have made in recent years, why we have to take action.
Now, I think that slimy Jenrick doesn't mean a word of that. And he kept saying the problem is the pace. No, the problem is that we're becoming a minority. You know, I don't want us to ever become a minority, whether it's in 10 years, 50 years, 100 years or 1,000 years. I don't want it to ever happen. Obviously, the Sky News correspondent there was a complete POS, absolute scumbag. Why does it matter? Why does it matter what they are? Why does it matter if white people become a minority? Yeah, people like him, you know what I mean? If he slips and falls under a bus tomorrow, nothing of any worth will be lost. What a complete scumbag. Anyway, Joe, what do you think to that interaction? What do you think to people like Jenrick literally stealing our talking points and talking about the rapid decline of the white British population?
Well, clearly, you know, the results of the elections have shocked them, right? 667 seats, I think Reform got. he clearly doesn't mean a word of what he's saying there. And when he's questioned on it, you can see that he melts. He's, because he's saying white British. And then when he's questioned a little bit further on it, he backs off, doesn't he? Yeah, and starts saying, oh, it's not about skin colour. It's about the pace of them coming. You know, not the fact that they are from a completely different cultural background to us and they turn our cities into the places they came from. You know, he hasn't got the balls to say, to go that far. He's just saying, oh, it's the pace, and how are they supposed to understand our history and our norms and all this sort of thing? You know, he's terrified to go that little step too far. You can see he clearly doesn't mean a word of it. You know, it's the same as Starmer. They've been backed into a corner now, and it's just, I've been watching, I've been laughing. It's the funniest thing ever, because, like, lefties actually believe in that these people have gone to the far right, you know, and that they mean it. And they're even comparing Starmer to Enoch Powell, you know. It's just unbelievable. And it's so funny because they've been forced to do it. We know they don't mean a word of it, and they can't win, whatever they do. If they don't say these things, they look bad. And if they do, they look even worse, because everyone knows it's fake. So, yeah, I've been loving it, I have.
I have as well. And I've got to say this, and I discussed this with David Clues last night on the show I did with him. When it comes down to it, we have to accept that the main reason these politicians are talking like this now is because Reform have done so well. And Joe, you actually slightly underplayed how well they did. They actually got I just checked it, they got 677 seats, two directly elected mayors, and won the by-election on the day. You know, it's massive, massive numbers for Reform. You know, this is the third national election that Nigel Farage has won, two European elections, and now a national round of council elections, which is, you know, incredible. They went from having zero county council seats on the Wednesday to having 677 and winning an election on the Thursday. Pretty much unprecedented, really. But when you see these people talking, I think you've got to pay attention to the small print. And the small print in that interview was, even though Jenrick was talking about demographics, and even though he was talking about white people becoming a minority, he kept qualifying it as the pace at which this is happening. Now, as I said, the pace, obviously, you know, if we can slow it down, that's better, because it gives us more chance to stop it. But the fact is, it shouldn't be happening at any pace. In fact, we should be reversing it and making sure it never happens. And that's the problem. But when you listen to that slimy toe rag interviewing him from Sky News, how did he make you feel? Because when you see some guy sitting there saying, why does it matter? Why does it matter? Why does it matter? I've got to say this. Whenever I see interactions like that, it just makes me realise how much I despise the mainstream media and how out of touch the mainstream media is with normal people.
I see a guy on, it was one of the breakfast shows, I think his name's Kevin something, he was saying, it's only a minority of people who don't want immigration. Most people think it's a good thing. And it's just like, where do they dig these people up? You know, it's just like, they surely can't believe that unless they live in a bubble somewhere, you know, and like they probably live in the North London bubble and they don't see anybody, you know, they're not going to get mugged outside their house. And they're saying that nobody's got a problem with it. Like, this is, you know, they realise that the British public have had enough now, and this Reform thing has shocked them, and they know there's, you know, we're only a few years away from a general election, and they don't know what to do. I bet they've had all sorts of emergency meetings behind the scenes, and they're like, oh, we'll have to start pumping out some anti-migrant sentiment. They're not going to do anything, you know, but they're going to keep talking this way because they think the public are thick. They really do. So it's going to be interesting to see how it develops, because I'm pretty sure they won't take any actual action. They're not going to start deporting people or anything, are they?
Well, what I'll say is this. I think we are witnessing a race to the right. So what you've seen is Nigel Farage coming out before an election and making a series of pretty incendiary comments. He said that he wants to be the deporter in chief, that he wants to see mass deportations, that he wants to appoint, he wants to form a government and appoint a minister for deportations. And he's going on deportations, deportations, deportations. And I bet there were plenty of people in the mainstream, plenty of people who are very, very centrist and have enjoyed the two-party system having a stranglehold over British politics for decades. And they'll have all been thinking, this talk from Farage of deportations and the deporter-in-chief, this is going to decimate his chances. People will look at him, they'll be scared off. You know, people will come back to the centre. And then, shock horror, they wake up on the Friday morning, Farage has won bigly. You know, he smashed it. And they're going to be saying now, how do we win the people back? Well, the only way they win the people back is by moving to the right and adopting Farage's talking points. But as they move further right and adopt Farage's talking points, for Farage to continue to stand out and to continue to do well and to continue winning, he has to then go further right, because there's nowhere else for him to go. If he goes to the centre, he's completely outflanked by both Labour and the Conservatives. If he stands where he is, well, he's standing on exactly the same platform as Labour and the Conservatives. So all he can do now, and all reform can do, is go further to the right and double down. And that is fantastic. And I think what we're seeing now is a dramatic shift towards the anti-migrant right. And you've got both of the main parties scrambling now to endorse policies that really they're fundamentally opposed to. You've got to remember, it was both parties have always endorsed immigration, but it was the Blairite regime that took it from tens of thousands a year to hundreds of thousands a year, to about a quarter of a million a year. Then it was David Cameron who came in 2010 on the promise that he was going to get immigration down to the tens of thousands, which people thought, well, that's good, you know, get back to the way it was, tens of thousands, not hundreds of thousands. But that same Conservative Party government took migration from 250,000 to 906,000. Well, at that point, it's got worse and worse and worse. I don't think people are going to trust the mainstream parties like they used to. And I think they're blatantly lying. But I still think it's a good thing that they're talking our talking points. I mean, do you think, you know, because there was some talk a while back about me being arrested for calling sort of the Southport murderer African, and saying that, you know, mass immigration and multiculturalism had led to what we saw in Southport, and that, you know, white Brits shouldn't become a minority in Britain. I think when you've got people like Jenrick and Starmer talking like this, I do think it would be a lot harder now to arrest people like me and you for talking about these things. And I also wonder, had Sam Melia been tried in the next couple of weeks, what do you think his trial would have looked like? And I think that's an interesting point, because at one point we were in a situation where these topics were basically regarded as conspiracy theories. Now, I don't think they're regarded as conspiracy theories anymore, and I think it's really hard to sell them as conspiracy theories when, you know, people in the mainstream are talking about them. Do you think this would have changed Sam's trial? And do you think this is at least, you know, having these parties talking like this, do you think there's at least some use in them doing so in terms of making our positions more secure?
Yeah, I do. I think if Sam's trial was now, he probably would have been found not guilty, you know, because everything's changed. And since Southport, I think things are a lot different. All those people who were locked up as well. and they said it was far right. And now they've done that report saying that the far right had no influence on it at all. It was just the people who had enough, you know. And you know, and you can see from the voting, he's like, you know, I always thought there's no political solution. You know, I don't trust Farage, and I do think that he could still try and pull the rug out from under this before the election. But I mean, this is, you know, what's happening now is you can only lie to people for so long before they know they're being lied to. And like Jenrick, like his party, they were in for like 14 years. They did nothing except bring people here that we didn't want. And now all of a sudden he's sat there saying, oh, the white British people, blah. Do you know what I mean? So it's, we've moved on massively. I mean, for about 5 years ago, we were just talking in echo chambers about these things. And now it's, we've shifted the Overton window that much that we've got, you know, somebody like Keir Starmer sat there trying to blag his way through it, you know? And you're right about what you said about Farage. He's going to have to now go further to the right. The more they chat this, you know, anti-immigration line, the further right he's going to have to go. So for us, it's excellent. You know, I'm loving it. I am.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it too, mate. And I'll say this, though. What do you think Starmer's going to do? Because I've got a bit of a worry, and this is my worry. I think that we're going to see a small decrease in migration. And my concern is the following, that people will be happy seeing migration drop by, say, a third or a half or even two thirds. But if migration drops by two thirds, we would still have 300,000 migrants moving here legally each year, every year. That would be far too many. And you know, Starmer is, or the figure that's been sort of thrown around is, it would be a victory to get it down to a quarter of a million. Well, a quarter of a million was completely unprecedented in the year 2000. And now we are talking about a quarter of a million being a major victory 25 years later. Well, a quarter of a million per year, every year, of young, virile men who are going to come here, establish a base, then send for their wives and churn out umpteen children, is still a massive L, especially considering that we've got an aging population and our women have such low fertility. Now, Starmer doesn't, Starmer spent his professional career actually arguing in court to prevent, illegal migrants being deported. So I don't believe for a minute that he actually cares about Britain or wants to reduce migrant numbers. He's only doing this so that Labour don't get eviscerated at the next round of council elections and so that he can hold on come the next general election. Because if you look at the figures, Farage is now favourite to take so many seats that he'll either force a hung parliament or could potentially force the Conservatives to go into coalition with him, which is, you know, unbelievable to think there's been such a rapid shift towards Farage's brand of sort of right-wing populism. But do you have the same concerns as me? Do you think normal people will effectively be conned by a reduction that doesn't really solve the problem?
I don't think they will now. See, I think they're going to lie to us and they're going to say that they're sending all these people back, and it's just going to be, like, the number, if they're going to start sending people back just for publicity, just to fool people, it's not going to be anything that makes a real difference. And I think it's gone too far now. I don't think people will be fooled by it.
I hope so, because I've seen all this happen before, and I think I've given you this sort of example before, but I remember when petrol went over £1 per litre and there was massive, massive trouble at the oil refineries, with truckers blocking the oil refineries, with mass protests. There was uproar. There was people saying, look, it can't go on like this. You know, if petrol goes over £1 a litre, there's basically going to be war and we're going to take the government down. And now we're looking at petrol at sort of £1.30 to £1.35 a litre. And people are saying, oh, well, that's not bad because it went up to £1.50 during COVID. So we're not paying as much as we once did. And I kind of see this thing a little bit like that kind of creep where people say there's going to be hell on when things rise. But if they rise slowly enough, but then the government dials it back every now and again, people can be easily bought off and people can think they're getting a win when really they're just being sold their own demise at a slightly slower rate.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But like I say, I think people have just had it now because, like, you know, I've been around a long time and I've seen election after election after election where the people have been saying, we're going to get a grip on immigration. We're going to deport people. We're going to do this. It's never happened. Every time it's always escalated, you know, and people have bought it every time. You know, people, you go in a pub and people are saying, oh yeah, that so-and-so, he's going to sort them out, you know, and then they never do. If anything, they make it 10 times worse, you know, and I think people ain't buying it anymore. You know, and things have got much, much worse than they ever were before, you know, with all the terror attacks, the kids being murdered, all the rest of it. And, you know, it's just gone beyond now and people can see it. You know, they can lie all they want, but you can walk around some of our cities and you feel like even Swansea, you walk around there. People have been messaging me saying I walked from the train station down to the city centre and didn't see a single white person, you know, and that's in Swansea. It's that people have got eyes and people know there's far too many of them here. And these people really, they want more. You know, they can sit there lying all they want that they go, oh, the white British people feel a bit, you know, but like they would like to bring more people here because they want rid of us. So I don't think anyone's going to buy it now. Well, I hope they don't.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I remember when I lived in Leeds and I was campaigning for the BNP, there was sort of this, a stereotype of these Kosovan migrants. Because at the time, Britain was being sort of flooded by Kosovans and Albanians as well. And you were just seeing these Kosovans and Albanians coming in absolutely huge, huge numbers. And wherever you went, you saw these guys who looked sort of kind of white, but not really white. And they were walking down the streets in, I'd say groups, but you could also sort of describe it as packs. You know, some people say, oh, well, that's, you know, it's a slur saying that. But they did. They walked in these groups. They were quite menacing when they were in these groups. They'd stare people down. And they were always dressed in the same way. They always had these very dark jeans on. They always had, along with the dark jeans, they'd always have sort of a brown or dark-looking leather jacket, a black or dark brown leather jacket, dark blue jeans, and they would always have Rockport shoes. And it was, people used to laugh about it. People used to say, like, it's their uniform, you know, because they did look as if they were all sort of, you know, dressed the same way and they'd be moving in a group. And you would go through areas of Leeds and people would say, I went down that street today and all I saw was immigrants. So all Kosovans, the whole street's all Kosovans. And soon after that, it all seemed to be sub-Saharan Africans. And now you've got entire areas that are overtaken with these illegal immigrants / asylum seekers, you know, Somalians. And people say, I went through an old area that I used to go when I was a kid, and all it was now was Somalians. And I saw just how quickly it took to transform what were once sort of the heart of Leeds's working class communities into places which were essentially foreign lands. And when we were doing that in the BNP, when we were talking about that demographic change, you know, you had Hope Not Hate out there, you had Trade Union Congress, you had numerous other smaller groups. Who was that one which that big black guy ran? There was a big black guy and he ran one of the anti-racist groups, Unite Against Fascism. I forget his name now. Somebody in the chat will remember
it. Wayman Bennett, his name was.
Wayman Bennett from Unite Against Fascism. That's him. Yeah, good old Wayman Bennett. And, you know, these people would come out and leaflet against you, and they'd call you a Nazi, and they'd say you were stereotyping people. And, you know, if you said, oh, we're becoming strangers in our own land and all this, you would be absolutely ripped to pieces by the paper for saying it. And it's amazing, because it's actually taken sort of 20 years for the mainstream parties to kind of begin adopting those talking points and bringing them up. It's 20 years. But we're talking about making serious change. And this is the big question, Joe. You know, if it's taken them 20 years to start talking about this, do you think we can actually affect real change? Because we don't have another 20 years. In, you know, the current rate, we're declining at 0.8% per year. In 20 years' time, white Britons will be 54% of the population and an aging 54% of the population, and it'll all be over bar the moaning. You know, is this a case of too little too late? Or do you think with a reform surge, we could slow things down enough to give us more time to organise?
Well, I think we have to believe that we can, because otherwise it's pointless, you know, because we all get like black pill from time to time. And it just seems like it's like snakes and ladders. Like one minute we seem like we're winning, and the next minute we're sat on the floor again. You know, so I think we're going to win, you know, and I think this is a good step towards it, because look at all those people now who are in councils, you know, with some say. You know, maybe they haven't got power, but they've got say, they've got a bit of influence. There's going to be chaos in some of those council chambers, you know, and if we get people in Parliament and the Senedd, you know, the lefties in Wales are absolutely panicking about the Senedd elections, because they're saying, like, Labour are on 18%, Reform, they reckon, are on 25%, and Plaid are on 30%. And I don't believe that for a minute, because nobody really likes Plaid, and Plaid are worse than Labour. So if they could get in, even if they didn't have enough to take over the Senedd, if they had, 20, 30 people in there, you've got influence in there, then you've got chaos, haven't you? Is otherwise, it's just all people with the same world viewpoint saying, oh, let's bring in a load more immigrants. Yeah, and there's nobody to argue back. You know, there's never been any opposition for years. There's supposed to be two opposing parties in Parliament. They're not. They've all been on the same page, you know? So I think we can make a difference, and I think we will win in the end. But, you know, people are going to have to step up, because people just, they want someone else to do it. They, you know, people are happy to sit watching streams. They won't get off their asses and do anything. And now's the time to do it.
Yeah, I agree. And I've got to say this. I think the reason all of this is happening now, it is actually reform. It's that Farage is taking their seats and they're panicking. But I think the reason we've got here to the point where we are today and our talking points are still alive is largely due to countless unsung heroes who have carried this flame since, you know, the late 1960s. There have been people in Britain who have tirelessly worked to spread this message, who will never be remembered and will never be honoured for the sacrifices they've made. But there are many nationalists out there who have been banging this drum for decades. And that's one thing that is probably disappointing about this, is that Farage is going to get the credit for bringing about the discussion on demographics. But really, the people who have we've been as noisy as we can, but we've been sort of drowned out or gagged. The people who have been sort of carrying this flame for so long is actually the people sort of listening to this stream, and the people who are in the BNP, and the people who are in the National Front, and the people who have fought for decades to bring this, you know, fought for decades with, you know, the sword of Damocles hanging over their heads, because they've all been worried about getting arrested and they've all been terrorized by the police. But we've been fighting for these facts to be recognized and for these issues to be discussed for decades. And I'm pleased that they finally are. But it probably is a little bit of a bitter sweet pill, because, you know, Farage is actually the man that's got these issues over the line, when we're the ones who were talking about these things when Farage and others simply wouldn't. And, you know, it's the same with groups like the Lotus Eaters and Sargon of Akkad. You know, I had a debate with Sargon of Akkad years and years ago. I can't even remember what channel it was on. It's probably been deleted and lost from the internet now. But it was interesting because I was arguing these ethno-nationalist points with him probably in about 2017, 2018. And that seems like an age away now. And he was arguing against everything that we say. But now he, you know, is full on sort of reinventing himself as an ethno-nationalist who wants a white British Britain. So it is sort of sad that the genuine ethno-nationalists aren't getting the respect they deserve for fighting for this for so long. But at the same time, at least we are seeing our talking points go mainstream. And that's got to be good, hasn't it, Joe? I mean, at least people are talking our talking points now.
Well, I, you know, like in my lifetime, I've lost friends over my opinions. I've lost, you know, I've got family members that don't speak to me. I've lost jobs. You know, I've been attacked. I've had all sorts of carnage over it, right? Loads of, you know, when we used to go leaping in with the BNP, nearly every house used to just say, get lost, and I mean, you know what I mean? Like, it's, and like, we've carried on and we've persisted in that. But like, we don't do it because we want praise. We do it because we want to save our country and our people, you know? So I don't care if Farage takes the credit for it, as long as it happens, you know? I don't care if we're just the unsung heroes, as long as we save our country and our people, because I'm not doing it for the fame or the credit. I just want, you know, I just don't want to become extinct.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I mean, it's the same with me. You know, we fought really hard and we've got to sort of be probably satisfied with the fact that finally the message is getting there. It's just, unfortunately, those who carried the torch through the darkest, hardest, coldest and wettest of times, you know, sheltering that flame so it never went out. We're never going to be the ones that cross the finish line, you know, and put that torch on the big pyre and get the fire started. But at least the fire is rising. And obviously, if people watch the stream with David Clues last night, you know, we've got some ways that nationalists will be able to be more involved, hopefully, in swinging elections. Anyway, we're going to do the second half of the show now. We're going to do the super chats. If you appreciate my work, if you appreciate the fact that I've been doing this for 25 years and I've been carrying that flame when no one else would, please do consider making a donation. You know, you can only do it via Entropy. This has really hit the number of donations that come in during the shows. It's really affected the donations that come in, obviously, after the shows, because people used to go to my Odyssey, watch the old videos and send a small donation if they like them. They can't do that anymore. So please do consider donating via Entropy if you can. It makes a big difference to me. It makes a huge difference to my family. And bear in mind, you know, I do have a wife, two children. You know, one of them's a newborn. Every little does help. And it keeps me fighting this fight and doing all the work I do behind the scenes, like launching this thing with David. A lot of work's gone into that, a lot of discussions, speaking to a lot of people. You know, I was the guy that wrote the FAQ for this. And, you know, we are doing our best to, you know, keep nationalism on the cutting edge of what's going on. And we are supporting, you know, smashing the political mainstream. We are supporting acquiring property, acquiring land. We are supporting community building, advocacy. And do remember that Patriotic Alternative have raised over £100,000 for political prisoners, and we haven't taken a penny of that. Every penny that was raised, less the fees from the fundraising site, which we have no control over, actually went to political prisoners and their families. So please do support our good work if you can. Musket Basket gave a total of $35, and he left a lengthy super chat, which comes in three parts. So thank you so much for giving generously, my friend. And I'll read all this out. He says, "Hi, Mark. The push for digital ID is happening here. LDP psychophants say that it can catch foreign spies, but that's ridiculous because they can easily prevent it by having a race-based citizenship. But that's banned in the current constitution written by the Americans. Fuck how that works. I recently saw a video on YouTube saying that Italy has lost 1 million. Oh, no. two different questions. So we'll start with the issue of digital IDs. My big worry about digital IDs, beyond the fact that they'll be used to take away our freedoms, monitor us, and essentially put a noose around our neck, is I think what Starmer's going to do, and bookmark this one, guys, bookmark this one, because this is the kind of thing the system will do. I think Starmer's going to say, look, we want to get control of immigration. We want to reduce migration numbers, and we want to get a handle on illegal immigration first and foremost. But the reason illegal immigration is out of control is because people cross the channel and there's no real proper form of ID. Of course, that's a lie because people have passports, driving license, birth certificates, etc. And he's going to say, look, if we had a digital ID linked to everyone, that everyone carried in a little app on their mobile phone or on a smartwatch, etc., or on a little RFID chip or something like that, we could bring in a system whereby you need a digital ID to do certain things. You've got it with you everywhere. You're automatically verified. And this would lock illegal migrants out of the system. And obviously, this digital ID would be coupled with something such as, you know, reducing cash payments or ensuring that cash payments weren't processed or weren't supported. And at that point, what he's doing is saying, look, to reduce immigration, to have a chance of white Brits surviving as a majority in their own country, what we need to do is take away your freedoms. We need you to submit to a digital ID. And my concern is digital IDs would be terrible, but I think they'll be sold to the public in a way that the public will embrace them, because they'll be told, if you embrace this, it will get rid of a problem that you're desperate to get rid of. I don't know what you think, Joe. I know you've been a big campaigner against digital IDs, and you know, I even did you some leaflets, didn't I, with the birdcage on, about sort of, you know, we don't want these 15-minute cities. We don't want digital IDs. We want people to be free and able to travel where they want. We shouldn't be caged in our own little areas. But what do you think about selling digital IDs on the back of stopping immigration?
Well, going back to when I was young and I joined the BNP, back in those days, they were using the exact same line for ID cards. They were saying illegal immigrants, people are in this country illegally, and we can't get a grip on it because we need people to have ID cards. And it's the same thing. It's moved on. And now, you know, they don't care about the illegal immigrants. It's just an, but like the thing is, people are so dumb that they'll buy it, you know? And yeah, I don't want to come across like Alex Jones, like, you know, but like I read a lot of stuff about these digital IDs. And like, if you have a look at some videos on YouTube about the social credit system in China, it's absolutely shocking, right? Because this fella, he's over there. He's not Chinese, but he's living there. And he's walked across the road. He's like, they call it jaywalking, right? He's jaywalking. He's got a text message on his phone saying, you've been caught jaywalking, £70 fine, right? And then he gets another message, £70 being taken from his bank, right? So instantly they've taken money from your bank like that, you know? They've got total control over people in that country. And that's where we'll end up. And if you don't behave yourself, if you criticise the government, they take money off you, or they'll prevent you. You haven't got enough points. You can't catch a bus. And there was even the one place where they locked people out of their apartments because they didn't have enough points. Because they'd been rebelling against the government, they were locked out of their apartments because the digital ID allows them to enter their houses as well. They don't have a key. They have this thing. Honestly, it's a slippery slope, this is. And when you look at the plans for the 15-minute cities and that, you wouldn't be able to use your card outside of a certain area. So you're basically trapped, you know? And it's like this trying to force these electric vehicles onto people, and they're saying that they'll need to be charged up every, like, 45 minutes. Well, that's convenient, because they don't want you to go very far. you know? And all these things, they couldn't do them fast, so they're going to do them slowly, slowly, bit by bit. There's loads of cities like Oxford and places in London where you can't drive down streets now, you know? And this is all... They need the digital ID in, and then everything else will just be placed on top of it. And like I said, back in the 90s, they were trying to sell the ID cards on the same thing. The absolute nonsense of it'll help us stop immigration, illegal immigration. They don't want to stop it. They don't need that anyway, you know? So, yeah, we need to resist it whenever we can. And, like, that's why I always use cash, and I encourage people to use cash everywhere you go, because if people stop using cash, they'll get rid of it. And that's another step towards this. It's just for total control over the people.
I agree. I think it's a really, really worrying thing. And I, as I said, I think it's going to be sold to people in, I think it'll be sold to patriotic people. That's generally how things are sold. So, you know, when you have, you know, laws that take away our freedoms, it's generally sold to patriotic white people in a way that they'll buy it. So, oh, look, it'll stop Islamic terrorism. Oh, look, it'll stop mass migration. Oh, look, it'll stop people coming here if they don't speak English. And, you know, you hear it again and again and again, and people cheer it on, you know, and it's always packaged up in a convenient name. So in America, it might be called something like the Patriot Act. Well, why wouldn't you support it? It's an act for patriots. Are you not a patriot? And, you know, the public kind of get false flagged into these things, don't they? You know, you can imagine that a group of illegal migrants commit some terrorist atrocity against white people in a nice area. All of a sudden, Starmer says, well, we were going to bring in this digital ID system. That would have stopped all this. And then you get in a mass win, aren't you? You're getting rid of the terrorists. You're getting rid of the illegal migrants. You know, you're saving Britain. All you need to do is give in to digital ID. And as soon as the digital ID comes in, it has no effect on asylum numbers. It has no effect on migrant numbers. It actually contravenes some stupid code on migrant human rights, so it doesn't apply to them. But it does apply to all white Britons who get chipped and are controlled like cattle. I can just see it happening. And I might be sort of black-pilling people, or I might be seeing me as if I'm really kind of just sort of negative or snarky about this. But I've seen it happen before, and you can sort of see it. You can see it happening again. Musket Basket gave two more donations. Thank you so much. And he said, I recently saw a video on YouTube saying that Italy has lost 1 million of their youngest generation to emigration. I'm assuming that most of them are going to America. I'm thinking that Europe is the human resources colony of the American Empire, and that East Asia is its manufacturing colony. And I believe that the currencies are rigged to do this, such that Europeans can hardly manufacture to sell anything and thus have high unemployment, while Orientals are overworked but poor. Well, I'd say the following. There are lots of people leaving the UK now. There is a very high rate of emigration. Now, most people go to one of three places. The first place they go is actually to the Costa del Sol in Spain. And some people go to southern France as well. There are pockets of, or sort of, there are white British colonies in Europe where people have established these little colonies in the sun. They've got their little fish and chip shops, their greasy spoon cafes, their English pubs. And they've established these little colonies out there where, you know, wealthy boomers seek to live out their final days in the sun. They cash their pensions over there. They get their money over there. They come back at Christmas and holidays to see their grandkids, but they live out their time in a nice sunny climate, doing things that are quintessentially English or British, but in another country, because they feel safer. And they've established a British colony where they can indulge in their own ways. The second place people go is Eastern Europe. And lots of young men go to Eastern Europe because it's traditional, it's religious, and it's full of beautiful young white women who, if you walk up to them and say, hello, I saw you from the other side of the cafe, you look absolutely stunning, could I take you for dinner? You know, if they're single and you're a decent looking guy who's well presented and you're being polite, they will blush and say, oh, that's very sweet. Yes, I'd love for you to take me to a dinner. Whereas if you walk up to a white girl in Britain and say that, you'll probably get laughed at or be called a stalker. So lots of, you know, religious white guys seeking traditional wives go to Eastern Europe. And finally, there's a third place where people go. they all flee to East Asia because everything there is extremely cheap. White people are treated very respectfully and given good jobs. And, you know, the food's nice and people dote on them. And again, you know, some men do fetishize Oriental women. I'm not one of those men. I wouldn't want to go to East Asia. I like the food, but I certainly wouldn't want to be sleeping with the women or sharing any space with the giant spiders and insects that live there. In fact, I don't want to go anywhere but Britain. So I do think there is an emigration issue in Europe, but I don't think people are emigrating to America. As for why we can't produce things, well, Europe doesn't produce things because fundamentally we have such high minimum wages, such large and, you know, restrictive labour laws, which are a good thing. I don't want people working for pence in sweatshops, but people in India, people in other countries do work for pence in sweatshops. So when you have, you know, the global movement of goods, it's impossible for European countries to compete because, you know, when workers get paid, you know, 10 to 15 pounds an hour in Britain and the equivalent equivalent in sort of India is, I don't know, 20 pence an hour. Well, it's going to be cheaper to make your T-shirts, your shoes, you know, your jeans in India. What's more, in Britain, if you are producing T-shirts, jeans and shoes, and there are chemicals used in that process or dyes or anything that's harmful for the environment, we have to dispose of them correctly, which again costs money. In places like India, you've seen they're polluted hellholes. There aren't laws, or there are laws to prevent that in some cases, but they're circumvented. So things are cheaper to produce overseas, and we have global trade. This problem would be solved if we didn't have global trade and we hadn't, you know, outsourced all our manufacturing. But that's the way it's gone. And I don't think we're going to be reversing that. I don't know what your takes are on that, Joe, about emigration. I know you're not a fan of emigration, but we do see a lot of Brits going abroad now.
Well, it's going to get even worse because I follow a lot of the Irish channels and that, like, and over there, there's no housing at all. And even if you can get a flat, the rent is ridiculous. And it's starting to get that way here because, you know, the thing with Serco now that they're offering this deal to landlords, they're in Wales, this are, you know, everyone is saying, oh, I'm being chucked out of my flat. My landlord wants me out because they're taking a deal with Serco, with the Home Office. It's like, it's 5 years guaranteed rent. It's more rent than you'll get from a family as well. It's full maintenance contract, you know, any repairs, all the utilities are paid. So even if you have a space when you've got like a few months with no tenants, you're still getting your rent. So all these greedy landlords are chucking people out. You can't really blame them because, you know, they haven't got the hassle of advertising for tenants. They haven't got the, there's no, you know, like when you rent a flat out through a property management company, they take like 10%. There's none of that, you know. So people are, these young kids now, they're never going to get flats or houses. And massive amounts of the social housing is being taken by immigrants as well. So people are going to, young people are going to be thinking, I'll move to America, I'll move you, you know what I mean? Because they're just going to be living in their mum's houses forever otherwise. And things are going to get worse and worse. And I don't believe anyone should be running away, you know? I hear people all the time saying, I've had enough, I'm moving to, you know, I'm moving to like Slovakia or somewhere like this, like, you know? I don't think we should be running away. We should be standing our ground because this is our country, and I don't think we should be running away.
The problem you've got with this social housing issue is the following. If you're a white Brit and you want social housing, you sign up, and if you're a landlord, you know, you've got to give these people a 6-month rolling contract and they leave a deposit. But let's say you get a bad couple and they come for 6 months. And during that 6 months, they've paid their deposit. They pay 3 months rent. They then stop paying their rent. They have cats in there that, you know, obviously wee everywhere. And you've basically got, you know, cat urine stinking, you know, through the floorboards. You've got people in there smoking. It makes everywhere smell. Everywhere smells of cat urine, you know. Everywhere smells of smoke. The place is ruined. There's fag burns in the furniture. And basically, they keep the place like a sty. Well, then you've got to evict them, which takes probably 3 months up until their end of their contract. You finally get them out. You're down 3 months rent. And then you've got the deposit. And the deposit may just about cover some of the damages. Does it cover it all? Does it cover ripping up the carpets? Does it cover, staining the floorboards again so they don't smell of cats? Probably not. You're on to a loser. Now, the government have made it. So if you take in migrants, you're on to a winner. You get something like a fixed 2-year lease. Well, that's 2 years of guaranteed money. The government pay the money directly into your account. So, you're not chasing tenants. And the government have said, look, we won't give you a deposit, but what we will give you at the end of the time this property is used by migrants is a full refurb of the house. So it's a win-win for them, isn't it? Guaranteed money for years. And if these migrants trash the place, if they, crap up the walls, if they keep, pets in there and animals, if they smoke in every room, if they burn the sofa to pieces, the government will just come in at the end and say, right, new carpets. Yep. How much do you want for that? Yep, that's done. The wall. Yeah. They kick through some wall there. Replaster all your walls. Yep. New sofa. Yep. And the floorboards, they're stained now with animal urine. Well, what we'll do, we'll have some specialists come in. They'll treat your floorboards. Everything will be fine. Here's a check for, £6,000 to do that work. Off you go. And you've basically got what is effectively at that point a fully refurbished property. So not only are you getting 2 years rent, at the end of it, you're getting a full refurb of your property. So what the government have done is made it virtually impossible for white people to get social housing because the deal for housing migrants is just so incredibly good that normal people or sort of profit driven people, should I say, simply won't turn it down. I mean, it's insane to talk like this, but that's what's happening. The government have effectively made white people renting houses second-class citizens. Would you agree with that, mate?
Oh, yeah. The thing is that someone told me that there's this landlord down here and he's got 2,400 properties, right? And he started letting them out to migrants, right, through Serco. So... And if you look at his website, he's got no availability at all. So odds on, he would have some availability because people will be moving in, people will be moving out, some people die. He's got nothing at all, not one property available. So he's let the whole lot to Serco. And that's just one guy, So this is what we're up against. And it's not a 2-year guaranteed lease, it's 5 years. And so
I was underestimating.
Yeah. And in between tenants, they're guaranteed rent. So if they were in between tenants for a couple of months, the rent just keeps coming. So you can't blame the landlords for taking that deal, when they could be dealing with, like you said, losers who don't pay their rent and take the piss and all that sort of thing, that way you're going to be paid for 5 years. You haven't got to do anything. And there's no estate agent fees to pay or anything. And at the end of it, you get a full redecoration. So you can't go wrong, can you? But this means that white British people, and especially youngsters, they're just getting shafted. And they're saying, oh, we're getting them out of the hotels, though. Oh, good. Oh, excellent. You know what I mean? It's like, it's no better. It's actually worse that they're out of the hotels.
Well, the crazy thing is, when you say in the 5-year deals and the deal is honoured, even if there's no one in the house, let's say you're renting out a modest. I'm going to actually Google this. I don't. How much does a 4-bedroom house costs to rent in London? So a 4-bedroomed house to rent in London, the first thing that's come up is Rightmove. And 4-bedroomed house to rent in London, they're talking between £4,000 and £5,000 a month which is just, you know, crazy. Some are over £5,000 actually. So we'll say maybe $4,500 per month to rent. So, you know, you've got 12 months in a year, 5 years. You've got a 5 year income of £270,000 for any landlord renting a 4 bedroom house to migrants in London. You've got over $250,000 guaranteed, and then the place refurbing at the end. Well, if you paid for that house outright and you earn it outright, you're sitting pretty, aren't you? You're making in excess of £50,000 a year with no shortfalls, no risk. And at the end, you know, a bubble payment that covers any damages. Plus, if by some miracle somebody sorts out the migrant problem and 3 years into the contract, they say, well, look, we're not going to be putting any more migrants in there, you're still getting paid and you can probably rent it out to someone else. So you make double bubble. I mean, it truly is insane what they're doing. So what are you going to have with white people? White people are simply going to say, look, kids, you've got to stay at home forever. Well, that's going to make people want to have less kids. I mean, I don't mind if my kids stay at home forever. You know, I love being around my children, but a lot of people don't. A lot of people want their kids out of the house as soon as possible. Sad state to be in. Absolutely sickening. Aunt Sally gave $5. Thank you so much. And said, thank you, Mark and Joe, for all that you do for our people. You both work so hard, and I really appreciate the great efforts you make and the sacrifices you make. Well, thank you so much, Sally. That's really nice to hear. And thank you for the super chat. Saturn 5 gave $8. Thank you so much. And hi, chaps. Does the tap water taste a lot different in Wales? I heard from someone a few weeks ago that it's much fresher and much cleaner.
I don't drink tap water. I've been drinking bottled water for years. I won't drink it, but I think that it's not horrible like it is when you go to London, but I just don't drink it because I don't trust them anyway.
Well, there's a couple of things in Britain that changes the way your tap water tastes. The first is whether the water is fluoridated. Now, the areas in Britain with water fluoridation are, that's where they add fluoride to the water, and Newcastle, Workington, parts of Lincolnshire, West Midlands, Crewe, and there are other, you know, sort of spotty areas. Luckily, the area I'm in doesn't have fluoride in the water, which is good. And the second thing is, there's two types of water in Britain. There's hard water and soft water, and they taste significantly different. So if you live in a hard water area, it will taste different to if you live in a soft water area. And people are going to ask the difference. What is the difference? And I'm Googling it. What is the difference between hard and soft water? There you go. Hard water contains more minerals and chemicals. Soft water doesn't. But usually soft water is higher in salt. So there you have it. Hard water is actually probably better for you, but it does taste funny. I certainly wouldn't want to live in London. And if I lived in London, I'd probably be on bottled water. They've got huge problems in London with sewerage. The system in London is basically Victorian and wasn't built, was a masterpiece when it was built, but wasn't built to deal with the number of people there. And I can imagine things there are pretty sketchy. But yeah, there is water treatment with fluoride in Britain and hard and soft water, which changes the way the tap water tastes. I once did drink from a natural spring, actually, and that water was absolutely brilliant. I was out mountain biking when we came across a natural spring, and I'd run out of energy drinks, so I had some natural spring water, and it was very clear and it tasted very nice. But somebody said that was stupid to do because it could still be sort of poisonous, but it wasn't, and I'm still alive, so there you go. I've lived through that as well. Hyacinth B gave $15. Thank you so much, my dear. And she says, thanks for your great work. Well, thank you. Very kind of you. VM gave $3 and said, big up, Joe. Well, thank you so much. Poit gave $25 and said, donation. Well, thank you for the kind donation. The Thin Red Line gave $14. Thank you so much. And said, have you heard Kanye West's newest song? Do you think it will be legal in Britain? And if so, will you be able to play it in public? I've heard it. I think it's quite entertaining. It's not a bad song. It's obviously called Heil Hitler. I think it would be illegal to play. I've got to say this, though. Kanye West's newest song has been scrubbed from everywhere, scrubbed from YouTube, scrubbed from Apple Music, SoundCloud. Every streaming service has removed it. Every video sharing site or mainstream video sharing site has removed it. I believe it's been removed off Facebook. I actually had a really tough time finding it. And I find this incredible. Like, this guy, look, I don't dislike Kanye West. I'd love to talk to him. I'd love to interview him. I'd love to spend a day with him. But, you know, he's obviously a guy who's been through some trouble. And if you listen to this song and you read the lyrics, it's about how a certain ethnic group tried to have his kids taken from him, stop him from seeing his children, and basically it pushed him over the edge. And that's why he's doing what he's doing. And it's, you know, obviously very sad that he's been through that. But it's amazing, isn't it, that you mention that one German painter and literally you can lose everything. You can be the most famous rapper on the planet, one of the richest men on the planet, a billionaire. You can have deals with, you know, these big sportswear companies, these trainer companies. You can have this massive library of music that's making millions and millions of dollars every month. But as soon as you mention the German painter, or sorry, the Austrian painter, in a positive light, that's it. It's over. You're gone. You're down the memory hole. And now he's just doubling down on it. I mean, he's still got, I believe, a net worth of $500-600 million. So yeah, he's not going to be short of a few quid. And I'm sure he can enjoy himself doing this. Have you heard the song, Joe? And what do you think of the fate of Kanye West?
Well, I listened to a little bit of it the other day. It's a load of crap. Like, and at the end of the day, he's not our people. You know what I mean? And I just think their music is a load of shite anyway. But like, yeah, it proves a point though. You know, it's like they taught him not to say that certain people control the banking system by shutting his bank down, didn't they? You know, it's just like, you know, how dare you say that? Well, and they proved the power they've got by shutting him down. Even though he's got all that money, they could still shut him down, like, you know? But I don't really give a shit about him because, you know, like I say, they're not our people. And you would get nicked. If you had that as a ringtone or something, you'd get nicked. I guarantee that you would get nicked because there's an old film called Bob, Sue and Rita 2. Do you know the film?
Yeah, it's the one that's actually about Pakistani grooming in Bradford, but they changed all the characters to white.
Yeah.
So it didn't look like the brown guys were the bad guys.
Yeah. But there's, you know, I can't say the words. The old pisshead father has a go at the Asian boyfriend, right? And somebody had that as their ringtone on their phone, and their phone rang while they were in a shop. And that ringtone played. Somebody made a complaint, and he got nicked for it. That's honestly that's how. So if you play that Kanye West song, you're going to get nicked. Like,
so what you're saying is, Joe, you're not heading over to West Yorkshire tonight to cruise around with me in the car, banging out Kanye West tunes.
No.
But I'm going to have to disavow everything you've just said there, Joe, because I don't know if you've heard, but Kanye is the guest speaker at the next PA conference. He's going to be headlining and singing from his new NS album. What do you think to that? Would you be down for Kanye flying to Britain to address the PA faithful?
He'd never get in.
He wouldn't, would he?
No chance.
No, there'll be a few people in the chat whose hearts fluttered at the idea there for a minute that Kanye was heading over to Britain to sit with me and Laura and drop a few beats. I'd definitely be down for that. Kanye, if you're watching, please do come to Britain. Please do come to the PA conference. We love you forever. It'll be the spectacle to end all spectacles. And, you know, I will absolutely promote your new single. I'm only small, but I do have some reach. And it could be a lot of fun. So come on, Kanye, you know, you can do it. And look, on a serious point, I do feel sorry for any man who has his family messed with and is debanked and is barred from seeing his kids for no good reason other than the fact that they want to mess with him for having the wrong opinions, you know. And it all started when he wore a White Lives Matter T-shirt. You know, he wore a White Lives Matter T-shirt with Candace Owens to prove a point. And they went in so hard on him. He went down the rabbit hole, discovered the truth about a few things, and he isn't letting up. And, you know, whether you like his music or whether you like him or not, you know, I'm not saying he's the perfect role model or anything. You've got to have respect for somebody who doubles down when they think they're doing the right thing. And I'm sure you'll agree with this take, Joe, but how many times have you seen celebrities start to say the right thing, and as soon as the establishment claps back at them, they completely give up, they completely throw away all the good work they were doing, you know, and they go back and do sort of a complete 180, start apologising and donate to the ADL or the Southern Poverty Law Centre or give, you know, £20,000 to some migrant charity. I think whether you like him or not, it's at least a good thing that he isn't backing down, because one thing I've been sick of in my life is seeing sort of celebrities come out, start to say the right thing, the media go mad at them, only for them to do this embarrassing walk back procedure where they give up on everything they've said and then endorse the very thing they were speaking out against. I don't know what you think about that, Joe.
It's absolutely cringe. You should never apologise for anything, because it's a sign of weakness. And it's like these people, like all these stars, during the George Floyd nonsense, the amount of people who came on camera crying like babies about offensive comedy they made like in the 80s and stuff. And I was just watching it. It's just so cringe. It's unbelievable. You know, it's just honestly, you've got to be one weak person to do that, really. Never apologize for anything is my motto.
No, I agree. I think it was Jimmy Carr who said, you know, I will be cancelled for a joke I made decades ago and have long forgotten. And, you know, we are living in that world. Thin Red Line gave another $5. Thank you so much. And he said, I think increasing numbers of higher middle class and even some rich people will come to our side, because only billionaires can really shield themselves and their families from diversity. I do agree with that. I think what you're going to see in Britain, as things collapse, is you're going to see sort of a white British underclass who largely live off benefits, and they will be unaffected because whoever's in government will give them benefits. You're also going to see an elite billionaire class, many of whom will be white, or a very rich elite class of pop stars and rock stars, etc., 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 who will also not be affected because they have so much money and they can easily relocate elsewhere. But I think there will be a broad middle class of people who earn anything from sort of 25, 30 grand a year, right up to 150 grand a year, who literally, or maybe slightly more, who literally get taxed so heavily because they can't afford the accountants, they can't afford to offshore their money, and they're not living off benefits and things that are untaxable. So there will be a taxed bracket, and that taxed bracket will be people who work hard for a living, people who have an income, and they will be the ones that will be squeezed to pay for the coming nightmare. And I think there will be a mass awakening amongst people who previously thought they were just out of reach of the problems because they had a slightly higher income. What do you think, Joe? I think there is going to be sort of a tax cow bracket which will eventually rebel.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, I think we're there at the moment, you know, and hopefully, like with the reform thing as well, like, you know, because things will only get worse. And I've always said that the British people are only going to stand up when they've got nothing, you know, and the way we are now is everything's being taken off us bit by bit. You know, and I think people can see it. They can see that if we stick with the old two-party system, it's never going to change. It's only going to get worse, you know? So I think we're there or thereabouts now, you know? Well, I hope we had anyway.
One thing that made me really laugh was they had a go at Farage in the Daily Mail the other day, saying like Farage was, bribing people with giveaways. And they said giveaways as if like, well, Farage hasn't got the power to do any giveaways. The only people bribing voters with giveaways are Lib Lab Con, the people in power, and they've done that for years. You know, they've bribed people with benefits, they've bribed migrants to come here to change the demographic of towns and cities to ensure they get re-elected. Farage wasn't offering giveaways. What Farage actually said was that he would raise the threshold for inheritance tax and raise the threshold for income tax. And they said Tories warn Nigel Farage plans for $140 billion of giveaways are not serious and would bankrupt Britain. Well, what a bunch of absolute scumbags Badenoch and Jenrick are. Why should white Britons be paying more tax? Why should people be losing their family homes in inheritance tax? If Farage actually knocked inheritance tax on the head and knocked and raised the threshold for income tax to make things easier for white families who are working hard, that'd make him even more of a hero. And the fact that the Tories cry every time people talk about lowering taxes shows what absolute scum they really are. I don't know if you saw that story, if you want to comment on it, Joe, but I think the idea of raising those thresholds would make life easier for a lot of hardworking Brits.
Yeah, it would. And the thing is if life became financially easier for white people, then they could afford to have more children. So that's why they don't want that, you know, because like when we were young, everyone had four or five kids, but you could afford that. And it was only like your father would work and your mother wouldn't work, you know, but like it's all different now. So, you know, lowering, if you didn't have to pay, like Farage is saying, you wouldn't have to pay tax under 20 grand and things like that. If people were financially better off, then maybe people could have more children, you know? But like the way things are, the only giveaways I see is things being given to foreigners, you know? It's like free bus passes down here, you know, where like my missus has to pay £8 a day to go to work on a train, but all the asylum seekers and refugees or whatever you want to call them, they're all on the same train for free, you know? They're getting free gym memberships. They get free football tickets. It's just unbelievable, you know? And then they got the cheek to say that, giveaways, like, Jesus Christ.
Well, they're spending, what is it, between, what is it now, about £4 million per day on migrants in hotels. That's a Tory party policy, and that's been carried over and is sustained by the Labour government. It just goes to show, doesn't it? It goes to show, you know, that's what people's taxes are spent on. Yeah. That should stop immediately and the threshold should rise. You know, we don't want some, you know, communist despotic nation where everyone who actually works and produces has everything taken from them for the greater good to fund, you know, some great welfare system that is erected simply for the benefit of migrants. It makes you sick. Stuart gave $20. Thank you so much. Said, well done, Mark and Pierre. You're doing great work. The initiative with UNN is great too. Very positive. Regarding the average white voter supporting reform, hopefully it will lead down a path of eventually opening the door for true nationalism and not just people being placated by empty promises and half measures. Well, thank you so much, Stuart. And yes, I agree with what you said. Myself and Laura will discuss that more thoroughly on Friday night. We'll lay out all the plans. So if you watch that stream, thank you for the super chat. I hope you enjoy the stream on Friday. Al Katie, please don't hit me, gave $50. Thank you so much for such a generous super chat. And said, Tony Martin on his YouTube channel made a great purely factual video on the recent May Day communist parade in London. They marched through central London with images of Mao and Stalin on their banners. We all know how many people these genuine dictators killed. How many of those communists will be arrested? We all know it will be zero. This is something that's a really, really good point and something that, you know, I've spoken of in the past. It's not that Hitler killed millions of people. It's not that Hitler was some sort of unique evil, even if you take what the establishment says about him as true. It's because they push the Hitler is evil narrative because it's anti-white. They don't care about people dying. They don't care about what Mao did, what Pol Pot did, what Stalin did, what Lenin did. You can fly their symbols. You can extol the virtues of those men. You can talk about how wonderful the societies they created were. And there won't be a single bit of comeback. And you'll also find that you can deny their crimes. If you say the Holocaust is over-exaggerated, you could be in big trouble. If you say that the Holodomor was over-exaggerated, no one gives a toss. If you say they got the numbers wrong about the killing fields in Cambodia and it was over-exaggerated, you won't be in any trouble. If you state that Stalin's gulag system didn't kill as many people as some historians claim, you can debate that openly at any university in the country. If you say, well, I think 6 million is a bit steep and it's much more likely to be around 271,000 and the whole gas chamber discussion is a little bit sketchy. It's more likely people died of typhus, you know, and you give the Cookie Monster analogy. Well, you know, you could be blackballed, you can lose your bank account and you can be in real trouble. There is a massive hypocrisy about these historical issues. I mean, Joe, you were talking about that earlier, saying that no one will be arrested for ever talking about how wonderful communist murderers were.
Well, exactly. It's all, you know, and it's like these people say, yeah, but like Holocaust denial is not illegal in this country. But if you get into a debate about it with somebody and you say the wrong thing, they're going to nick you because they'll say that what you're saying is an offence under the Public Order Act. And when we went to the Drag Queen Story Hour in Burnham-on-Sea, there was this, we were like mixed in with all these lefties and Antifa, and there was this commie, and he was storming through the crowd, and he said, why won't anyone debate the Holocaust with me? You know? Like, nobody would, like, because if you did, like, and you say the wrong thing, you're going to get nicked, you know? They're going to film you debating it. And but like what you just said, you know, you could say, you know, the killing fields and the Holodomor, you can, no one's going to come for you if you talk about those things. You could say the whole thing is bullshit and no one's going to come. But you say the wrong thing about the Holocaust and you're going to jail, you know, and that tells you a lot, that does.
I think what they'll do is make Holocaust denial illegal in the country via the back door. So it'll be something like the Malicious Communications Act or the Public Order Act, and they'll tighten up legislation and say, well, if you're saying the Holocaust, you know, if you're questioning the Holocaust and you're doing it online, it's a malicious communication. And if you're saying it in public, it breaches the Public Order Act. So you'll be able to do it behind closed doors at private meetings. But if you publish the speeches, you'll be in trouble. I think that's what they'll be doing. Crankless gave $5. Thank you so much. He said, did you know China produces more CO2 emissions per year than the whole of in the Industrial Revolution combined? Europe makes about 5% of the world's CO2 emissions. Yeah, I did know that. And it doesn't shock me. But also CO2 emissions aren't a bad thing. There's this whole idea that CO2 somehow damages the environment. It doesn't. The more carbon dioxide you have in the air, the quicker plants grow. So generally speaking, if you release more CO2, it would actually cause a greening or a blooming of the planet. The idea that CO2 is inherently bad is nonsense. In fact, there are people who industrially produce certain fruit and vegetables, and they do them, they produce them in sort of warehouses where they pump CO2 into the places where the plants or the fruits, the vegetables are being grown, because they grow quicker, they ripen quicker, they're larger, they're juicier. These are facts. This idea that CO2 is some sort of demonic gas that is going to kill us all is absolute nonsense. And I think in the air, I believe air is about 80% nitrogen, about 18% oxygen, and I think CO2 is just a portion of the 2% of the gas that's left over. Let me just check that. Composition of the air we breathe. Am I correct about this? Yeah, I wasn't far off. I was slightly off, but I was massively overestimating the carbon dioxide. So I said it was about 80% nitrogen. It's 78.1, not far off. I said it was 18% oxygen. It's slightly more than that. It's 21% oxygen, it's 0.9% argon, and carbon dioxide actually only makes up 0.04% of the air we breathe. So there you have it. I wasn't far off. Carbon dioxide is a very small amount of the air we breathe, and increasing it slightly wouldn't have any real effect. If anything, it would just make trees and plants grow slightly quicker, and once they bloom, they actually convert CO2 into oxygen anyway, because the planet is self-regulating. So my figures were out by a very small amount, but generally speaking, there's a little bit of a science lesson for you guys. Anyway, that brings us to the end of the Entropy Super Chats. If you want to super chat and haven't super chatted yet tonight, I would really appreciate it if you did. But we do have some over on Rumble, and I'm going to read those out now. We got a dollar from Spartan Sadakar, and he said, MMA fighter Rafael Pojima in Poland is being legally harassed and fined for organizing peaceful citizen patrols. He even excludes anyone saying anything rude from his patrols. Well, this is what they absolutely hate. And I think this would happen in Britain. There's always been a massive pushback for any kind of neighborhood patrols by white people. Now, conversely, there have been neighborhood patrols and neighborhood police forces formed by both the Muslim and the Jewish community, but they won't allow that from whites. I mean, you've seen this, Joe, haven't you? You know, if you get white people together and form some kind of what they would call a vigilante group, but it's just a neighborhood watch group, you have to be very, very careful, especially with things like street patrols.
Well, what happened in Llanelli was, when the protests were big outside that hotel, the local lads there said they were going to start patrolling the parks, and they did. And there was Romanian beggars in the town centre, and they were going down at night, like 15, 20 lads, and they were patrolling, and they were saying to these beggars, op it, right? And they got rid of them, right? And then the police found out about it. And, like, I was told never to talk about it on streams or anything. Ended up, like, three lads got arrested and remanded in custody over it. And they were in for a few months, I think, and then I think it all got dropped. But, like, basically the message was, you ain't policing your own streets. It's as simple as that, you know, because they know where it ends up. They'll end up giving someone a kick in or something. But they weren't doing that. They were just basically... They were saying, if they're going to fill this town with immigrants and they're going to be hanging around in parks, drinking and begging, we're going to police the place, because you won't see the police anywhere, you know. But they weren't having it, and they've stopped it, you know, and they've made it clear that if anybody else tries it, they'll be stopped, you know.
I can imagine that happening anywhere. And, you know, the problem is, when you have white girls being groomed and you have gangs of predatory males cruising the streets and the police won't do anything about it, and then white men organise to do something about it and are arrested, that tells you that the police are literally facilitating the rape of white girls. Truly sickening. And finally, we've got another dollar from Spartan Sadakar. Thank you so much. And he said, if it is not framed as white genocide, it is not framed correctly. Why does it matter? The correct response should be, why do you support white genocide? Who is paying to promote genocide? Yeah, I think that is the next logical step. You know, we've got people talking about mass immigration. We've got people talking about changing demographics. We've got people talking about the situation or the problem of white minorities and about white people feeling like strangers in their own land. But the next thing has to be white genocide. We have to keep pushing the Overton window or pulling the Overton window. We have to keep shifting the discourse. And we must fundamentally ensure that as things go forward, this sort of drive to popularize our talking points doesn't stop. And I think this is the reason why we need the ethno-nationalist right, or one of the most important reasons why we need the ethno-nationalist right, because I will say this, we can have a big effect on politics. And I think if it wasn't for us, and we kept banging this drum for so long, I don't think we would have seen the shift to the right we're seeing now. And yeah, we're not leading that shift to the right, but we are the ones, as I said earlier, that carried that flame. We are the ones that kept it going through dark times. And I think we do, or we should, get some of the credit for bringing this about. What do you think, Joe? We've just got to keep pulling it in our direction, and hopefully society will keep going that way.
Like I said earlier, you know, I don't care who gets the credit for it as long as it happens, because we can't just let our race and our culture and our country just be destroyed. So it doesn't matter how we get there. We just need to get there. You know, if Farage wants to lap up the praise, he can, as long as this country is saved.
How far do you think Farage will take it?
I think even if he became prime minister, which I don't think he wants to, you know, I just got this feeling that he's going to do something at the last minute and pull the plug, or something's going to happen, you know. But if he got to be prime minister, I think he'd be a big disappointment. I think he'd probably stop the boats, but he's not going to start deporting massive numbers of people. I think we'd be very disappointed. You know, it's a bit like what Trump's doing. He was going to do the biggest deportation history has ever seen. And he started off with the ice. I was looking at the ice raids and I was loving it, you know. And it all seems to have dried up now. As if it was 2 or 3 weeks of just high publicity raids and, you know, you're going back to Mexico, sunshine and all this, like, you know. And then it's all just dried up, like, you know. There's like, I can remember in the 90s, the head of the Met Police saying there's over 1 million illegal immigrants in London and I haven't got the manpower to get rid of them, even if I wanted to. And he said, if I did, it would close down the restaurant trade overnight. So he knows where he knew where they were all working. And, you know, and that was then, that was like a long time ago. And he was saying 1 million then. So unless Farage gets in and it's just constant deportations, I don't think he'd do that, see? I think he'd have a little bit of a showboat for a few weeks and then it'll just all dry up, you know?
Yeah, I think so. And I think you're looking at the situation with Starmer, and he's been deporting. I think it's about 1,000. How long's Starmer been in?
It's about 10 months, but I told you what happened when I was in Wandsworth prison is every Thursday they deport 30 Eastern Europeans, right? They only deport ones who are wanted in the country they come from. So he could be counting those deportations when he says he's deported 40,000 people.
But like, well, he says 24,000, doesn't he? He claims to have deported 24,000. Yeah. In 10 months, I was going to say
that I was told that if this country sends those people back, they get paid £1,800 for each one they send back. But it's literally only when they're wanted for a crime, home, you know. So it's like every one of those prisoners that's not British should, as soon as they've done their 3 months or whatever for shoplifting, they should be flown out of here, you know. But, he's just lying. When he's saying we've deported more people than the Tories, well, that's no big deal, is it? Because they didn't deport many either, did they? And Starmer had signed, there was a Jamaican who killed somebody. Didn't he do a rape or something? And then, he killed somebody. They were going to deport him. Starmer was one of the people who stopped the flight, and then he ended up raping somebody else, you know? And now we're supposed to believe that Starmer's going to deport criminals.
Well, I think that Starmer is very much doing his sort of best impression of a chameleon at the moment. And that's the issue. We are starting to get people talking about the issues that we want, but we've just now got to hold their feet to the fire. And that means that we've got to really hope that more reform candidates get elected so that Starmer and Jenrick fear even more and are forced even further to the right. I think at the moment, that's the most viable way of us getting anything like what we want. And as I said last night, we can play a role in that, and we're going to talk about that on Friday night, or I will be with Laura Towler. Anyway, that brings us to the end of the show. It's been a really entertaining show. I'd like to thank Joe Marsh for being here. Joe, would you like the final word, mate, because you are the guest of the night?
Well, all I just want to say is, you know, this campaign that Mark and David Clues are doing, get involved, watch the stream on Friday, and just get involved, because, you know, now is the time. We're gaining ground and we need to keep fighting.
Well, thank you for being here, Joe. And I'd like to, you know, say that Joe is one of the hardest workers that I've ever met in this cause. And if you are in Wales, please get in touch with him. Please come out. Please help with these projects. And as Joe said, please do check out the stream on Friday night. There's going to be some big revelations, some big news. But also me and Laura are going to be streaming for the first time in quite a while. And we're going to be putting forward the things we hope to achieve. Now, I'd like to say thank you to Joe. And I'd also like to say a huge thank you to everybody who donated so generously throughout the stream. If you did want to donate and you're watching this on replay, you can still donate via Entropy. Even though I'm not live, that would be very much appreciated. And if you enjoyed watching the stream and don't want to donate via Entropy, you can do so via cryptocurrency. Or if you wish, you can write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com and I can give you an alternative way to donate. Obviously, we're working very hard. We're really doing our best to effect change. And finally, we've got the mainstream politicians talking about our issues. So if you can support, it would be very much appreciated. Anyway, I'll be back on Friday with Dr. David Duke. I'll be back on Friday with Laura, and hopefully I'll be back on Sunday night with a stream as well. I'll also be back same time next week for another episode of PWR. Thanks again to Joe Marsh. Thank you to everyone who donated so generously. And thank you to everybody who tuned in. Much love goes out to all those in the community as always. Stay strong, keep fighting, and I'll see you all again soon. Thank you, everybody, and good night.